Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyo and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show here on UK Health Radio, the real feel-good radio. The pandemic and other recent social global events have been for some of us emotionally and psychologically hard to manage or even traumatic. The good news is that trauma can be addressed. The not so great news is that childhood trauma, for example, can fly under the radar for many years, transforming into endless suffering and physical pain. Today we will discuss about healing trauma with Dr. Heather Harrington, a naturopathic medical doctor for over 30 years, specialized in post-traumatic stress and adverse childhood experiences. Dr. Heather, welcome to the Healthy Debate Show.
Thank you so much, Andrew. This is a pleasure and an honor.
Please tell us a bit about your work. I know you have an impressive career, but if you can summarize it, that would be fantastic. And of course, about your book, Transforming Trauma, which I'm very excited to present to our listeners today. I'm holding it in my hands and I'm very impressed about the amount of extraordinary information and research you have put in it. So I can see it was a book written from the heart, but please tell us about the story of the book and about
yourself. Thank you so much. Well, the book actually starts decades ago when I was actually a camp counselor in Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia in Canada. And I, for some reason, these people came up from eastern states like Maine and Massachusetts, and they were psychologists and psychiatrists. And I learned so much from them about the body-mind connection. They had actually been affiliated. They had been friends with Wilhelm Reich, who was the infamous psychiatrist who was an extraordinary genius that was actually imprisoned in the States, and he died there. But so that's where I really learned about the body is always telling a story. It doesn't lie. And if you follow those symptoms, you can you can get underneath and see where that story really came from. So then when I went to naturopathic medical school in Seattle, and then I practiced in Vancouver, BC, I was ready on another level that I hadn't been trained at naturopathic medical school. And so then the archdiocese in Vancouver, someone said, well, I don't want to be treated with drugs for this sexual abuse from a priest. And they found me. And so I started treating sexual abuse survivors. And so that was back in, I graduated from Bastyr in 87. So that must have been starting in 88. And I'd had my own sexual assault. So I understood what was going on there. And my father had been in the war and my mother had been an orphan from Scotland. So all of that kind of came together. And I just found that it was, there's so many things that you could do. And also I learned that so many people hide things because it's so painful and so shameful. And that became my work. And so then I started writing about it. I started, I've written a couple of novels and we write the musicals. We have a musical actually for children who are, you know, anxious, but it's not, it's like a really beautiful story that went around LA schools. And the children really connected with it because it was about a spell goddess and they had never been in nature. These are underserved communities and these children, but they understood the power of nature. So it's not just this book that I have, but we also have this musical, The Calling Hour. And that is really the place, that point where I really have lived in the sense of trying to get people to understand that you can heal, you can go to nature, you can use naturopathic medicine and also another natural approach, the creative arts, and how all of these things are drug-free. So it's been really exciting to me to do these projects as well as see patients.
I guess this kind of answers my next question, to be fair, but if you can just expand a bit on this. So what do you think your approach is different to trauma? Because I was going through your book and of course I did notice this almost perfect blend, to be fair, between arts, between alternative medicine, therapy. So why do you think this your approach is different, or what makes it unique? If it is, because it doesn't really necessarily have to be, but
well, I think it is because, okay, so people usually, you know, naturopathic medicine, through all of those things, whether it's botanical medicine or homeopathy or nutrition or hydrotherapy or understanding your thought processes, and that's balancing the biochemistry. So you have to start there. You have to just be grounded. And in that, you can add meditation, mindfulness, you know, any kind of things that really allow you to go into your inner world. And so that's kind of how it goes through the book. I do the balance of biochemistry, then into the inner world, and then finally to the expressive arts. And I learned that I'd always danced, not professionally, but I'd always danced to kind of get rid of anxiety, to just, you know, feel joy. And then when I had quite a severe, very severe case of Graves' disease, and there was no way that I was going to take drugs or have my thyroid cut out. So I went to an ashram, I meditated. I've meditated since I was 15, so that's a long time ago. And I've danced. So, but then I really wanted to sing. And so I realized that to heal from my Graves' disease, which I did, I also need to sing almost every day. And I do sing now. Luckily, I'm, you know, married to a musician. And so, you know, he's a piano player. And it's just worked out absolutely beautifully, because there was a lot of times in my life that I just really did have, you know, PTS myself, you know, with both my parents. So struggling to get rid of that. And now I just feel like song and just expression, as well as every day having a, you know, making sure that my biochemistry is balanced. And so that it's almost like a three-prong approach, although I call it a two-prong approach. And I think that anybody can do that. And even if somebody doesn't know how to dance or doesn't know how to sing, you can always move and you can always hum. And I think that, and I know in our children's musical, we have a song called Humming. And she does that to just get herself centered, because she has to get the children safe on the mountain. And I think that I've just seen it. You know, I don't, in the book, you probably notice, I don't do cases. I'll mention certain people, but that's their story to tell. So I have this knowledge because I've worked with so many people, but I also will share my own journey in healing, which I really needed over the years, which is why I chose this profession. But I need to do it naturally. I can't do it with drugs, or I couldn't do it with drugs.
It's very interesting, because whilst you were talking, I just realized something. I danced as a child, and I talked a lot about, you know, my dancing experience in the show. But I realized that, you know, for me, dancing, whilst you were talking, for me, dancing was a way of expressing myself and moving away from everything that I couldn't express, you know, emotionally.
Exactly.
In the real life. So yes. I think I realized that dance has been such a huge contribution to my upbringing, because it was my way of being myself in a completely non-judgmental way and without adults, which is very interesting, right? Because as a child, you feel the need to be protected. But for me, I guess it was a bit different, because I felt the need to escape. I was a bit of a rebel, to be fair. So it's interesting that you felt the same. Or maybe it's not that interesting, because dance and music do bring people together, and they do have, you know, very cathartic properties, isn't it?
And it's also fun. You know, with trauma, you know, in the book, I just say, well, you know, I know if you're lying there in bed and you're thinking, how can I do these things? Well, how can you not? But that's why the expressive arts, I mean, you can meditate, and a lot of people, oh, I can't meditate. Well, you can kind of move and still meditate. You can hum and still be in a state of, you know, that inner state. And it is fun. It's going back to a child being curious. How can I make a story from this? You know, like, you know, we say, well, molecules make up the world. And someone once said, oh, I think it's stories. And I think it's so true that, you know, it really is. This world is about stories. And so, yes, you have a terrible story right now. You know, someone could come to me and they have this horrible, horrendous story. And okay, so you still can breathe. You're breathing. So let's go deeper into the breath. Now let's go deeper into, you know, I have this whole thing tracking, which is in the book, you know, like how do you, those symptoms that you have, what do they mean? And they'll actually talk to you. If you actually address symptoms, say a headache, you know, what is it doing? Well, I'm stressed out and I'm, you know, you're obviously not breathing. You're not getting that oxygen. It's your head and your body is trying to tell you that, to try to protect you. So you understand those things, or severe anxiety. What is a severe anxiety? Well, I'm so scared that that is going to happen again. Or, you know, the little one inside me is so terrified of even going out the door. So those are the kind of things you track and you find out what's going on and you create a story. So I did actually a solo show not too long ago, and I did it about my rape. And it was, I can't even tell you, like, I felt like I was on the road doing all these. I mean, I had been writing the book before that, but I realized how powerful doing a solo show was. And also, as I say in the book, you know, you have to protect yourself too, depending on where you're at. You don't want to just go out and do your solo show for anybody. But just being able to tell all these friends of mine, these women friends in the audience, and it was, I can't even tell you how powerful it was. It was one of the most incredible moments in my life because, well, afterwards, I realized that I had let go of so much of my pain, emotional pain. I didn't even know it was still left. And now I just feel so happy. And so I just, you know, on that level, I really wanted to share my knowledge and my experience, personal experience with people. And for some people, I hope it's not, I don't get into too personal, so it doesn't make anybody else uncomfortable, but I certainly wanted to share what I had learned, especially also with Graves' disease. That was also really important to me because so many people have Graves' disease or have some kind of thyroid or some kind of autoimmune, and they don't realize that the body is simply telling you from a deeper level what's going on with your being and your soul. And it's something that you can move into and understand and break free of. And that's what I did. My Graves never came back. I had it twice, actually. And they said, oh, well, you're never going to, you know, you can't get rid of this. And it's like, are you kidding me? You can get rid of it. You can get rid of anything if you do the work. I mean, sure, if there's genetics involved, and I'm not saying that everybody can heal everything, but it's way more than we ever thought.
And it's also something that we have under our control, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because if you're taking medicines, you just trust the research and the physicians that has prescribed to you that. And for me, for example, I don't like to take a lot of medicine, but I usually do when I'm, you know, completely in pain. But for me, it's always a question mark, you know, what am I actually taking? You know, what's right inside there?
Exactly.
What is that? Because other things, like you described, for example, and I think it's such a beautiful concept, the story concept you brought up. I made a note of this. So I wrote that symptoms have stories. And I never thought about symptoms having stories.
Uh-huh.
And I struggle a lot, less now, but quite a lot in the past with severe anxiety, quite crippling, right, to be fair, for many
yes
years.
Uh-huh.
And I had to take medicine because that was the solution, because it was that bad. But then on the side, I've also started therapy and trying to heal in my own ways, which was dancing, you know, prayer and other ways of releasing the emotions. But
exactly,
I never thought about my symptoms as being stories. And I think I'll start some inner work after I finish your book to see how I can use how can I you know, give another voice to my symptoms rather than the one that they choose to have.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll find in the book, it will show you, it goes through writing and dance and vocalizing and theater. It gives steps, you know, how to make that work. There is a lot in the book that will, you know, give you information and let you go forward. But I think that's the whole, when you say, why is my book different than another trauma book? I think that is a big part of it because people don't really talk about that. And yet the other part of it is just the history. You know, I do talk about how there's different systems of medicine. And in terms of like the Flexner Report of 1910, it stopped a lot yeah of people from going forward and understanding that you can use natural medicine. And for me, creative or the expressive arts is natural. It's drug free. And that's what we need right now. I mean, these people are just, you know, kids here in Los Angeles, they're overdosing at high school.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is absolutely terrible. And this makes me think about the psychological root of trauma. And the fact that it's, you know, when you go through a situation, an event that's traumatic, and you consciously recognize that was a traumatic event, you know what you're dealing with. But what happens when you don't know you've been through a trauma? Because it was quite subtle almost.
Yeah.
You know, sure. There's hidden emotional and psychological abuse. And these things are so hard to identify. And sometimes it takes decades without right. you even noticing why you became an addict or why you yes. decided to, you know, get divorced 5 times and why right. this and why that, right? So right. how do we recognize these unrecognizable signs of trauma?
Well, I think that it's really important for people to understand so how they were born, what happened in the first years, because if you don't really have an event that you can relate it to. For instance, in my case, my mother had a hard time breastfeeding. She had had 2 children that either had died, they were stillborn, or they had died a week later. So 2 boys. Then she had my brother, who was full of allergies. And then she had me, but she had to have an alcoholic drink every time she breastfed me. So it's always amazed me that I have to stay away from sugar, for sure. My father was also adult onset diabetes. But you need to know your own history. And you have to understand, where was your mother and your father? What was their mindset? So my mother, I realized, was in terrible grief because she had lost 2 children. And then she had my brother, who was always, I remember him always being taken to the hospital. The ambulance coming because he couldn't breathe with the asthma. And so for me, I was relatively healthy until I became a teenager and started realizing that I had issues because of the dysfunction in the family. And, you know, anyways, that's a longer story, but that is the, you know, ask your parents, ask your grandparents, what was going on? You know, when I was born, look it up even astrologically. I mean, I don't know much about astrology, but I mean, every way that interests you, find out. I had a lot of patients, mothers, who would say to me, you know, say they had 3 children, and they'd say, well, I was going through this, and then my child, you know, was fearful, or, you know, I was really, this happened to me, and that's the way my child. You could see that their child was reacting to what the mother went through during those 9 months of pregnancy. So all the information you can gather. And then, you know, I can see now what stopped me over the years and, you know, certain, whether it was family, friends or different events that made me a little more reserved until I realized that I didn't have to be reserved anymore.
I think I completely agree with what you explained about, you know, observing and asking your family members. I think it's also a big matter of acceptance. At least this is how it was for me. That was my experience. Because seeing things, it's absolutely fantastic. But accepting them sometimes yes. is very, very difficult. Yes. Very difficult. And, you know, what usually happens, and you, of course, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but what usually happens is in most families it's a bit of a taboo not to look at your parents as role models. Like, it is very difficult to say something bad about your mom. It's right. almost like untouchable. It's a taboo. It just feels like maybe men are more likely to get criticism from children. I think it's an interesting thing to look into. Then women, I don't know why is that connection. Maybe because they give us, you know, life. But to take them from the high level, to drop them and just say, actually, you kind of traumatized me and I'm starting to accept that and it wasn't all right and you should have known better. I think that's traumatic itself, isn't it? Look, am I just going too far?
Well, I think that maybe in Europe that might be the case, but I think in North America the mother is always blamed. I mean, I see that. Yeah, the father gets off scot-free and the mother is left because I think the child, you know, well, whether it's inherently or just really does actually trust the mother to be able to say it. They don't trust the father perhaps as much. I don't know, but I see that all the time. It's the mother is to blame for anything that child doesn't feel completely 100%.
Well, she is to blame by the society, but maybe what I was mostly focusing on was the fact that, you know, as a child, because you have this ideal image about the mom, mm-hmm. that she's untouchable, and indeed she's the one that, you know, listens usually, and, you know, moms are not perfect. It's kind of hard to bring criticism into the conversation with moms. I don't know. Maybe it's just my perception. Maybe it's Europe.
I don't know. Maybe different countries are different,
maybe,
you know, because certainly in North America, or at least certainly in America, we speak up. I mean, people are so direct here, whereas in Canada, even, you know, Canada, people often skirt what they really think, and you have to kind of learn how to speak Canadianese or understand Canadianese. I certainly saw that in my practice, and I don't have the experience with in terms of Europe or Great Britain.
No, it definitely might be some cultural influence there, because, you know, I grew up in a country that, you know, in Romania after the fall of communism, so probably there was quite a strong influence, you know, of some specific patterns. Absolutely, like intergenerational patterns, and this takes me to my next curiosity. It's about intergenerational trauma. So I know that trauma is experienced different, isn't it? And we've observed trauma from the beginning of the world, to be fair, right? We had, like, history has taught us trauma in so many ways. But how impactful can be intergenerational trauma? And I was so pleased that I've seen in your book, I think it's quite a big chunk of information about indigenous people,
yes.
and the community and the trauma there.
Yes.
And it just blends perfectly with some documentaries I've watched a while back, actually, about Canada and indigenous people. So tell me a bit about that. What are the effects of suppressed or delayed you know, trauma because of the shame of sharing with the community, or
right? Well, in Harold Napoleon's book, he actually had something terrible that he did, and he was in prison, and so he wrote this book, and he was part of the Yupik people up in Alaska, and he started to trace the fact that there was so much suffering that happened in 1918, the so-called Spanish flu, and communities were wiped out. These villages just really weren't there. And I don't want to speak for those people, but from what I understand, that there was just so much shame, which is what happens to all of us who have been raped or who have witnessed something. And for them, apparently, according to Napoleon, now they have circles. He introduced the idea of community circles so that the people could really talk about it. Now, what's happening now is there's so many indigenous women that are being gone missing, are murdered, and nobody really is doing very much about it. And I know that they had a first, I hope that it's an annual event up in sort of Northern Humboldt, I believe it is, like the Yurok tribe and the other tribes up there. And I think that they were hosting it. I learned this too late to go. But the fact that people are now addressing the fact that these women are being murdered or they're going missing, and that we are paying attention to that, I think that, you know, society just doesn't realize the extent that whatever culture, right? My mother, because she lost both of her parents within 6 months when she was 10 years old, and she came from Scotland to the States, she experienced very similar that I can see from people who have lost their culture or lost their traditions, because we need community. We need to be part of other people. We need to have those, whether they're, you know, yearly or kind of rituals of a sort, that keep us connected to other people and to the land.
It's interesting because whilst you were talking about that, I realized that I've got we have quite a lot of friends that had children here, so Romanian friends that had children here. So we know every now and then when we see them, the children speak perfect English, but they don't really speak our language, right?
Right.
So I was just thinking, I never thought about this as being traumatic, but now I'm realizing that, you know, the upbringing that we had, you know, living in a country that, you know, everyone speaks the same language and it's our language and we have traditions and then you have specific rituals, isn't it? Like spiritual thing that you're doing. And, you know, there's a routine. And here in the UK, for example, you have the Sunday roast. Now back home in Romania, you have, you know, a barbecue because that's what we have to do on Sundays or Saturdays. So they will be missing a lot of that. And they will basically, they are attached to another culture, which somehow belongs to them and somehow it doesn't, isn't it? So it's just I think it's interesting to see this as a traumatic potential traumatic aspect of their lives, because it might be later on that things evolved into, you know, diseases or other sorts of symptoms without them even knowing that actually at the root of it is the sense of belonging and being part of a community.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one day my daughter said to me, you know, I guess she thought that I would think that there would be a plant or a food or homeopathy. She said, you know, the most important part of healing is feeling part of a community. I was like,
That's very powerful.
She's a smart girl, smart woman.
No. Oh, that's very powerful. I remember when I moved here in the UK, you know, my first concern was, to be fair, my first one was when I'll be able to have enough friends to go for a lunch, because there was no one around. Right. So for me, it was like, when am I going to be have the opportunity to share with some people that really care about me and they're interested?
Yes.
And that's, you know, being part of the community and feeling like you belong, you know, to a place.
Yes, absolutely. And I know that I realized that with my mother. She came to America, to Pittsburgh, with a Scottish accent, you know, and my aunt talks about it now. My mother's gone, but my aunt is now 100 years old. And she just, you know, she says, you know, the kids made fun of our accents, so they had to change their accents to an American accent. And then when my mother got married and moved to Canada, she had to change her American accent to a Canadian accent. And how does that affect someone? You know, I mean, that's pretty profound kind of unsettling feeling. And she would talk about what happened to her, but she always, you know, you just knew that she didn't feel quite part of the culture.
It's almost erasing your identity and or almost like an invalidation of who you are as a person. You know, you're not good enough to be American. You're not good enough to be a Canadian. You know, where do I sit? You know, at the border doesn't work. This is such an interesting conversation, Dr. Heather. Let's come back after a few minutes of commercial break. And I would like us to discuss further about the stigma around trauma, about addictions. So we'll be back with Dr. Harrington in just a couple of minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Dr. Harrington. We're discussing trauma, and we've gone through some of the brilliant chapters, you know, in Transforming Trauma, her brand new book. And we were discussing about intergenerational trauma. We were discussing about, you know, childhood experiences. But you mentioned something at some point that, you know, drew my attention, and I wanted us to expand on this. So you mentioned you worked in the past with people who suffered from alcoholism or any type of addiction. And
right. And
I know that usually people talk about, you know, how do we manage trauma? You know, what's first, you know, alcoholism or trauma. But I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in understanding is there such thing as trauma for the family that's, you know, participating and observing this person who's struggling with addiction? What's the healing for those families like?
What a great question, because what I loved about working, I worked with Vernon Wolf, who's MFT, what is that? He's a marriage and family therapist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the way he did tracking was taking all those levels. So, and you would play the part in his workshops. People would take different roles. You know, I would be the mother or the grandmother and somebody else, you know, and so that you would learn that. And in that way, I would do it with my patients. I would just, in terms of imagination, I would get them into a state like, you know, a semi-hypnotic state. And I would say, who is there with you? And do you see your grandmother? Do you see your aunt? Do you see these different people around you? And how did they affect you? And that, when I created this exercise in my retreat called Moving to Healing, I would get people to become the womb. And so we would have a, you know, many people around the woman, and each person would be, say, an arm and or a leg or the head, and they, the person working, would be their womb. You might not be able to get there, but you could get to their stomach, and you would find out so many different things. And that's how I think I came to that actual exercise, because I transposed being your parents and grandparents, which is, gives you a tremendous amount of information as well, but taking these feelings inside yourself now, presently, and having people, you needed them to say, with the legs, they could kick it away, or with the stomach, finding out why you couldn't really get into the womb because you had, say, been raped. And so the stomach had ideas for that, and we could stop there and then give the person what they needed to be able to go deeper into themselves. Did that make sense? Could,
yes,
I say that too quickly?
It was very visual. It was very visual.
Okay. But yes, so anything that's around you, you know, if you can understand the dynamics of the other people around you, even animals, and how animals have helped you. And so say you are someone with anxiety and you go to the grocery store and all of a sudden you feel something made you uncomfortable. You don't have your animal there, but you can imagine holding them and then breathing into, you know, feeling that love that people, I mean, we went from where I live here in Los Angeles in this apartment complex, we went from just in our area, one dog to 10 dogs during the time of COVID. And so I think that's something that I would like to address, is the fact that so many changes happened because of COVID, and our relationships changed, you know, depending on what we felt was the correct way to go. Now, for me, I'm a natural person, so of course that's my view. But it's really what's around us, and how do we heal from that as we go forward in 2022? With all the things that have happened to us, and how many relationships and family members have become estranged. And so that's just something, if you don't mind, I just like to address that.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it was the same for many people. We had many conversations about, you know, what happened with, like, during COVID, after COVID. And that's the general, you know, agreement, is that COVID has made us look at a different way, made us analyze our relationships differently and choose different dynamics. And yes, it probably because there was no way we can physically meet, you know, some distances were naturally created and accepted, and yes, some boundaries, which is a very interesting thing to observe. Because if in the past, and I come from a small community, and one of the things that one of the reasons why I wanted to leave the community was the fact that, you know, everyone knew about everyone, and there was, right, there was a feeling of not having privacy. So yes, of course, in London, I have all the privacy in the world because no one is actually, you know, asking you much unless you want to share, right? So there's, right, there are some boundaries really well set, right, up, which I'm very pleased right, for. You know, when you don't have this I have to meet type of thinking, it does help release a lot of pain caused by trauma and by, you know, forced relationships and forced agreements, right, social agreements. Right. So it's quite interesting to observe also the benefits of COVID, I would say, not just the downside of it, isn't it?
Well, you know, when you're a writer, when you want to stay home and, you know, play the piano or whatever, sing, it wasn't bad for us. But out in the world, you know, everybody, you know, people in very cramped apartments or,
yeah,
it just became that they weren't really themselves because they weren't in the world. And that, you know, the officials, public health officials, did so many things that were incorrect. And that's another thing we have to address, because we have to understand that the authorities that tell us what to do or try to tell us what to do, they have to be correct. They have to be based on science. And so much was not based on science. So then that breeds a whole other level of anxiety that's out of our control, seemingly. And I think that that's why I've tried to say on my podcast, and is that, please, one of the most revolutionary things you can do is to learn about yourself and stand up for yourself and get the truth of who you are and what the facts are about your own health care and what you are entitled to. Because if you don't do that, you are at the whim of anybody saying anything, and you have no idea what their training is or if they know what's going on. And I think that so much of healthcare is just done on a very shallow level, and that's why people turn to pills and the other things that they do. And I just really want to encourage people to take control of their health and understand that it's not a chore. It's actually, that's why the expressive arts can make it so much fun. And I know some people don't want to eat well all the time. Okay, don't eat well all the time, but be aware of your own thoughts. Be aware of your own connection to the universe and to the earth. And just, you know, hold yourself in the light and in high esteem. You know, don't let yourself go into that victim state. Understand that you can work through these things. And not only is it possible, but it's creative, and let your curiosity rule you.
How can we optimize our metabolism to heal from trauma? Because we talked about emotions quite a lot and the psychological side, sure, of trauma, but what about our body? You were mentioning, yeah, you know, you might not want to eat healthy all the time.
Well, I think that if you can eat healthy at maybe 80% of the time, that would be a good start for some people. and, you know, the gut plays such a role. I mean, it's so connected to the brain. And the brain, we know we can change, because over the last, 15 years or so, we know we have evidence now that the brain is neuroplastic. It can heal itself. And that's where the whole, you know, epigenetics, that field of biology, comes into play. Because if you do eat properly, if you do help your thoughts come to a positive attitude, it really is important. And that, I don't mean to suppress, you know, any symptoms or thoughts, but just dig into them, understand why they're there, and then to be able to come into really the light with them and to be positive. But the diet is so important, because, you know, what we have in our gut in terms of our microbiome, we want healthy bacteria in there, because they will get along really well, and they will allow the brain to have that maximum effect for having the energy, for being just focused. You know, your neurotransmitters are going to work a lot better that way. So I really, you know, I know a lot of people want to be vegan these days, and I think that's great in terms of vegan and organic and lots of vegetables. But there's also the other side with Weston Price, who was a dentist, actually a Canadian dentist in the 20s. And he went around to all these people around the world, all these communities, and how did they stay healthy? And I think that's another way. I don't want to impose my way, but I think that sometimes people really need to have that organic grass-fed beef. And I know this will turn off a lot of people because we all believe, you know, so many people believe it's just for vegan. Just make sure the animals are treated properly. You know, I go by, I've always had this affinity for the indigenous way. It's closest to the earth. And I kind of look at that, you know, is it okay to eat salmon, that kind of thing. But you also have to know your own allergies. So that's another point, is find out, are you allergic to dairy? Are you allergic to beef? Are you allergic to grains? You know, don't take anybody's word for it. Either get an IgE and an IgG allergy test and find out what is particular to you. And you may find that as you get healthier, these allergies will go away, or they won't, and you just have to stay away from them.
Dr. Heather, I would like us to take just a few minutes of commercial breaks, but then when we're back, because we're getting close to the end of the show, maybe we can summarize some of the steps to try to hear ourselves. And then, because your book is so fantastic also for professional health professionals, I would like us to look into some advice, some tips for clinicians or for someone who is new in the career and they're trying to find their way. All right, sure. So we'll be back with Dr. Harrington in just a couple of minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back discussing trauma with Dr. Harrington. Dr. Harrington, some steps of healing ourselves, because you describe so beautifully so many methods of trying to find art, trying to use, you know, meditation as a healing method. So what are some of the steps? For example, if someone has gone through a traumatic event that they're fully conscious of and they're not comfortable yet to go and seek professional support, what are some of the things that they can do to, you know, start the process of healing?
Well, I think that you do have to start with your body. And I think that one of the easiest ways is when things are tasty. So like coconut butter, that has MCTs, medium chain triglycerides, and that will feed your brain instantly, those brain cells. So you have to understand that, and it's delicious. So it's a really great way. And I tell patients, you know, have some coconut butter. And sometimes people say, oh, it's too fattening. Just have a teaspoon a day. It will really help. The other thing is that you can use cold showers. You can use putting your feet in really cold water, or you can get organic socks, cotton socks, put those on, and then get wool socks over it and just lie down. So those are really simple things to do to start. And of course, you know, the Epsom salt baths with the lavender essential oils or the lang lang, those kind of things. But just to pay attention to your own mind, you know, just observe yourself. And so that can be the beginning of your curiosity. As you're starting to take care of yourself, you're taking that self-care, whether it's you know, in a cold lake or in a bathtub with the hydrotherapy, or you're eating certain foods like berries and a coconut butter, or things that are fermented, you know, that's so important for the gut. Be curious, just step back and, oh, what happened today? You know, like maybe you want to just write down three good things that happened today. And then you can start writing your story just really slowly, but there's no rush. Paying attention to yourself, just observing yourself, like we do, say, in meditation or mindfulness, is so important. And it's a really great place to start. And that's like being in your still point. Your still point will then come out, you know, radiate out to a certain thing that you like to do, like whether it's dance or sing or act. Just start letting that come out. And then, of course, ultimately, you know, the way I do it, I start with art and writing and music and vocalizing, and then theater, because we really have to accent the humor in this eventually, not at the beginning. We have to take this very, you know, obviously take it seriously the whole time, but there's got to be a way that we incorporate humor into our lives, because without the humor, it's just very so serious and, you know, earnest, and you just need that little poke of having fun. Just watch children and how they have fun. And that's really a big part of healing.
I think humor is also it brings some balance, isn't it? And almost, yes, you know, makes puts the trauma in a different light, and it almost minimizes it, but not in a derogative way or in a negative way in any way. It just gives you hope. It's kind of motivational, you know. I've been through all of these, but I can laugh about it. I didn't when it happened, but I can now because I have the wisdom. So I think it has quite a healing, you know, powers through the empowerment and the motivation that humor can give you. And almost, and I love sarcasm, to be fair. I think sarcasm does help to some extent. It has helped me. Something that, you know, it helps someone else. Very briefly, Dr. Harrington, if some of our listeners are new clinicians, new counselors, and they're starting to, you know, have conversations with people who have suffered through trauma, what are some of the things that they can do to ensure that they don't get contaminated in any way?
That they don't take on the person's trauma, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay. No, that's a really good point. It's really important. And that's why it's so important that after hours you find something fun to do, you know, be part of a group, have your own support group. You know, I used to kayak all the time. And of course I danced at home, but I just, you know, I was living in British Columbia where I had my clinic for many, many years. And it was just so important for me to get out there on the water and just let it go, or come home and have a shower, a cold shower, or jump in the ocean or a lake or a river. That kind of thing is, you know, just the self-care of that. But when you are with a person, just make sure that you are breathing. I would sometimes just, not to take away from listening to them, of course, but I would just make sure that my breath was in harmony, just, you know, the four in or eight out or whatever it was, just so that I could really focus on them and not take it on. So if you're not tensing up and you're relaxed and you're able to just, you know, just silently monitor your own breath, that is a great way to do it in the office. And just also the other part of that is just be curious about their story. Don't take it on like, oh, I got to fix this person now. How am I going to, are they ever going to get better or whatever? No, this is their journey. Listen to them with compassion and let them speak. And as I said, be curious. Never, okay, I shouldn't say never, ever, but, you know, a lot of times people will come from a referral and then, you know, it's always easy to go and look at the chart from another doctor or healer of some sort. And I don't think that's a good idea at all. I think you need to see this person in their own light from your own eyes and not be prejudiced from what another person would say about them. And I think that's also really important, so that you listen to them freely and without judgment.
Dr. Harrington, we're at the end of it. I can't believe it. We had like 15 minutes of conversation. It just went in a glimpse. So when can we find you online?
Well, I have a website.
Where can you buy your book? Sorry, where can we buy your book? Yeah.
I think you can buy the book in any bookstore. If they don't have it, you can order it because it is distributed. I know in North America it's distributed by Chelsea Green. It's published by Hammersmith Books. That's located in the UK. And I think, and definitely on Amazon, I always like to promote, you know, the little shop, but sometimes Amazon can be really helpful for people who don't have those shops. They're also really good for self-publishers because I did two self-published books and I really do appreciate them. But yes, the independent bookshops are so important and you can just ask them and they should be able to get it. And if they can't, please email me at Dr. Heather H at iCloud.com and, you know, let me know what country they're in and we'll find a way to get it to you.
I found it on Amazon. I found the ebook. It's in front of me. So it's very easy to identify the book online. So thank you so much, Dr. Heather, for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you about transforming trauma.
Well, thank you so much, Andrea. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
And I feel like you should come back at some point because we just crashed the surface. We didn't manage to discuss about everything that's, you know, trauma is such a complex topic, isn't it? So I wish you best of luck with your book. And I hope I'll speak with you very soon.
Anytime, Andrea. It's been wonderful.
Let's end today's show with Pink and Family Portrait, a song about relationships, family, and conflict through the eyes of a child. Until next time, may we hear only good things.
Some deep shit. Look at me.
Be a fan. sleep at night. Oh.